Hello and welcome back to Putting Town Centres First, a new podcast by the Heritage Council. I'm Alison Harvey and I will be interviewing our guests throughout the series on the need for innovative and collaborative responses and solutions to enhancing and regenerating our historic town centres. In this episode, I speak with Nikki Matthews, Senior Architect in the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage. Nikki is a former conservation officer and she speaks passionately about the need to enable and repurpose our vacant built heritage and building stock in town centres. She gives an overview of the pioneering work in the restoration of Ainger Street in Dublin and talks about the emerging national policy on architecture and the Programme for Government's commitment to developing a town centre first policy. Please enjoy Nikki Matthews. Hello folks, today we are with Nikki Matthews from the Heritage Unit of the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage. Right, Nikki, as my mother would say, you're looking good. Great to have you here. Just in terms of your role in relation to Town Centres, Built Heritage, Regeneration Ireland, could you just tell us a wee bit about your background, your experience? Nikki, what's your story?
Hi, Alison. Thank you for having me along today to talk about my role in the department. I have to commend you on your work and the Heritage Council for bringing forward this podcast on town centres. It's timely and insightful. So just to give you a bit of background, I'm a senior architect in the Built Heritage Policy in the newly configured Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage. And this in itself provides a great opportunity going forward to be fully integrated in the new moves that are being made on town centres.
Okay, so your unit, you're only there since June, since the new government, is that right? Yeah.
Correct, and we're sort of settling in now. I'm delighted to say that I've been recently asked to join the task force on town centres first policy, so I'm really looking forward to working in that. As a bit of background, I'm a registered architect accredited at Grade 1 Conservation. I'm a member of ICOMOS Ireland and I'm a member of the Urban Design Committee in the RIAI. And these groups and activities keep me informed of current issues, thinking and best practice. My role in the department is to provide advice to protect and preserve Ireland's built heritage as a support to sustainable economic development and to have consideration of national and new EU legislation, and I'm very fortunate to have a very wide-ranging and interesting job in terms of planning and development, reuse and repair of historic buildings, urban regeneration, strategic infrastructure projects. It's a big job.
So you have a love of sort of historic environment, historic buildings. You know, you're a conservation architect. That's pretty cool.
I have a number of years clocked up at this stage in this game. What I wanted to bring to the attention of your listeners is the department's role in developing a new national policy in architecture. And I was very engaged this morning to hear the EPA bringing out their report on the state of the nation and the environment in general, which, of course, the built heritage piece is a key component. And I represent the department on the SEA forum.
Very good. So in terms of the built heritage sector, what are the benefits do you feel you're saying there about the EPA? You know, the benefits of a properly managed built heritage sector. You know, we talk about sense of place, civic pride. I mean, I think people have really reconnected with their place during COVID, during this year, this pandemic, this lockdown, you know, this most recent lockdown as well. What are your thoughts on that?
I think COVID-19 lockdown has really taught us a lot about ourselves as a society and what matters to us and what we need to value. The insight we got to this in particular was we ran a workshop on town centres as part of our open consultation on town centres. It really was an energetic and an engaged workshop. We produced a report from this workshop that I can make available to your listeners. It really showed that people want towns to really perform well and to support their lifestyles, support sustainable living, and to be more locally based rather than having to do long commutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done on those workshops, because I went to a few of them. I know you had a few sort of with the IAF as well. So they were really enjoyable and people were definitely really engaged, weren't they? I mean, people feel so strongly now about town centres this year. That was pre-COVID. And then you had a workshop online as well. So yeah, you did it every way, didn't you?
oh, we did it everywhere we were left. What was really important about our town centre workshop was that we went back after the COVID lockdown and we gathered really interesting information from people. And I suppose the opportunities that were thrown up in terms of how to capture reusing buildings in town centres for other uses, like transgenerational housing, mm-hmm. like in Europe, I'm very much aware that they actively bring older people back into towns to support their older aging years in terms of that they have all the facilities and service around them. And I suppose the piece that we're interested in developing more is ideas of high quality public realm where people can meet and integrate. Wonderful work by Julia Bologna in Clonakilty, which I know you've been talking about, is truly inspirational in terms of the difference a county architect can make within a town.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's about sort of having a concept of town centre management, you know, and as you say, sort of housing and all ages and communities.
People being able to meet and have access to cultural sites and enjoy good places to eat and visit and most importantly, live. I mean, I think the piece that has been missing is that we haven't really unlocked the potential of vacant buildings in town and getting people to live in town. If you want vibrant streetscapes and people there, they need to have high quality amenity and they need people living in high quality housing. And that's the piece that we have to
yeah, do. We might need to adapt those buildings or we might need to do infill or, you know, sort of enabling. Isn't that really everything that we've been talking about in the programme with others?
Yeah, it's all of those things. And I suppose really it's, I mean, it was one of the reasons why working with the RAI, we produced Old House, New Home, and it covers examples from both urban and rural settings. But the idea was to show people the potential of our historic buildings, how they can be lived and how they can provide incredibly beautiful housing.
Good to get that information out there, isn't it? So maybe we could share that as part of your podcast.
Absolutely. And there's lovely videos to go with that.
Okay. So in terms of employment opportunities, I mean, obviously for these buildings to be, you know, adapted or whatever and to be reused, traditional skills retrofitting is going to be important. And also we're going to need new jobs in 2021 in this post-pandemic world that we're sort of hopefully entering now that the vaccines seem to be coming. You know, how can we highlight the opportunities for traditional skills in Ireland?
I just think the moves that are being made and the way Europe is starting to look at its funding programs, ever, is just a fantastic opportunity for Irish towns and for craftspeople in general, for contractors and for practitioners. And really, I suppose it's a huge opportunity for us to organize ourselves and do this joined up thinking about how are we going to do this and really look at some of the practices that other jurisdictions like Historic Scotland and Historic England have developed in their conservation teams. We have a challenge now in terms of building climate change resilience, and the repair of our buildings will benefit how people perceive our towns. And if we do it well and we make them more resilient, then people will find them more attractive to live in.
So what traditional skills are we sort of talking about? You know, carpentry?
They're typically the type of work that we have supported through our grant schemes. Hugely important is having well-skilled roofing contractors who weather buildings. You keep your feet dry if you have a good roof.
Buildings safe, roof's on.
And then, of course, like the repairs of masonry is so important to how buildings thermally perform and how they look as well. But the performance increases hugely if they're actually well repaired. We know that we can model historic buildings up to B1 ratings if they're well prepared. So we don't have to iron out all their historic character to have them performing well. But I suppose it's a piece that we need to communicate well. And we also need to harness, you know, the digital opportunities that are coming. I mean, the Green Deal and the renovation wave are really asking us to be smart about how we're going about this. And I think there's huge opportunities there
Yeah, it's a very exciting time, isn't it, for town centres, and also for that sort of employment and creating new jobs, and you know, but also fixing our town centres at the same time.
Well, for me, I mean, a very simple fix is looking at eco-friendly approaches. And I was listening to your previous podcasts, and, you know, eco can be brought in not just to how you do retail, but also how you actually repair your buildings. And we have had a fantastic tradition of craft in Ireland in terms of manufacturing of windows and
very much
design of shop fronts. And it's an area that we've lost huge ground in. And it would be a wonderful gesture back to Irish towns if we were to rebuild some of these traditional skills. I look at envy the likes of Historic Scotland, who have the engine shed, or the traditional skills school in England, and I think, gosh, you know, really, it would be a great opportunity.
It'd be great if we could have that in Ireland, wouldn't it? It'd be wonderful. You know, as you say, we've such a legacy there. And I mean, the Heritage Council is a huge supporter of that traditional skills, you know, sort of culture.
Well, it was very interesting as working as a conservation officer in my previous life, that I suppose my practice at the start of when I was doing the job and how I finished doing the job were two very different things. And I learned that by bringing people to buildings as they were being repaired, they engaged in the process and they really wanted to meet the craftspeople who were doing it. And they really got the buildings. It was a much richer and really their support of historic buildings was just turned around just by working in a different way. And I think that's an area that maybe we could really look at in terms of town centres in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole story there, isn't there, that hasn't really been sort of, you know, told about, you know, the different sort of styles of those stonemasons. And, you know, I'm aware that we don't really have anywhere to go to find out about it. So we need to, you know, look at that. So in terms of your unit or the unit that you work with or work for, you're working on a new national policy on architecture. Can you tell us about progress on that, Nikki? What are your sort of key aims and objectives?
Well, this is the third policy in architecture that is being developed, and I feel very privileged to be working alongside my colleague, Dr. Ness Roach, on it. It's very interesting to see what a policy in architecture can achieve, and previous ones, you know, really produced extraordinary projects. I know you're going to be talking to Ola Murphy about the Venice Biennale, and Free Market was one of the projects that came out, but also things like Engage with Architecture, which has hugely informed my practice as a conservation officer, the National Schools Educational Programme that the IAF have done, and of course there's been a myriad of design manuals and, you know, research programmes done by the Limerick Georgian Lab and, you know, the REI Town Toolkit. So a vast array of projects, and it's really important that we develop a new one, and it's a really strategic time in terms of the work that's going on in Europe. And President von der Leyen's State of the Union address brought up this idea of a European Bauhaus.
You sent me that link. That speech was amazing, and Orla actually talks
about a lot
about...
of gaps at that.
we all were sending it around to everybody, weren't we? It was so inspiring, wasn't it?
It was very inspiring, and I think it's really interesting, this idea of bringing all architects and engineers and designers together. I mean, it's an extraordinary...
And planners.
And planners, sorry.
Don't forget us.
But it is this idea of you could be forgiven for thinking that, you know, this is a whole new kind of style of architecture. It's going to be kind of born out of sort of an international architectural style. But really what they're trying to say is that this is our time to bring all our creativity together and to grab the technologies and the innovations of a time.
Exactly. Yeah. I think her message is very much go for it. Just go for it. In terms of projects that you've worked on yourself, you worked on a pioneering project to do with the restoration of a rundown part of Ainger Street. Can you tell us about the approach that you created and developed? This is really what we need, isn't it? You know, sort of methodologies.
It wasn't so much that I created a new methodology. I was fortunate to attend a European conference where the findings of the initial round of the Herb Act programme was being disseminated. And it started me thinking about working in a different way rather than just focusing on individual buildings, but to look at urban centres or collections of buildings. And The Ames Street study is a really useful model to look at and complementary to the CTCH program, as it similarly gathers the kind of information that you have brought together as the core data of a place. But it also builds in the archaeological and built heritage potential of a place, and I suppose gives access to the community about that basis and the potential of it.
I think that's lovely, Nikki, because you touched on that earlier about the sort of cultural and social value that needs to now be sort of, you know, included in any decision making, really. And as we were talking earlier about sense of place and civic pride, that value that you're talking about, you're trying to capture that, aren't you?
Yeah, and I suppose people sometimes think that, you know, this cultural heritage is only present in, say, you know, the high profile buildings, but actually our towns are made up of so many different elements, and modest buildings can be of phenomenal importance to understanding why a place or where a place has evolved from. So
we could share that, couldn't we? That methodology that you came up with and the traffic light system at the end.
That was one of the key findings that I felt that had great relevance to today's discussion. There's been a lot of recent notice in the newspapers about, you know, the buildings are overprotected, and really the point of the role of the conservation officer in particular is that they have the skills to communicate what is special about a place and what's special about buildings, and to guide and direct how buildings can be reused and repaired. And the traffic light system was a piece that came to my attention through the Vienna City Development Plan, and what they were able to do, having gathered all this research, they were able to indicate which buildings had really significant fabric and then lesser buildings that could be, you know, more easily intervened in or modified or adapted, and then the ones that actually had no real potential and that could be altered more dramatically.
I think that's a really clear message we need to get out from your podcast, you know, that conservation officers, you know, you are trying to manage change. You're not trying to make sure that the building turns into a museum as such. And I think that's a message really that we need to get out for the conservation officers.
I really look forward to Jamie's. I know you have Jamie McNamara coming up, and I'm really looking forward to his insight into what they do in Historic Scotland. I think the conservation officer role in Ireland could be supported.
Yeah, I was going to say that they need to be supported for repurposing for that actual outcome. And I think maybe the systems maybe need to be looked at to see how that can happen, so conservation officers can be repurposing officers as well. Okay, so in terms of the methodologies that we're talking about there, you know, as part of phase two of the CTCHC program, you know that we're working on a building survey methodology just to sort of try and get it up and running and tested. And we've got Jamie as our external international peer reviewer. You know, that with the methodology that you're talking about, what else do you feel is needed? Like, definitely I feel from the program what we've learned that we need more methodologies, and we need to sort of take people through the process, and we need to work with people and enable people. You know, what are your thoughts? I mean, obviously modeling, 3D modeling, like, you know, we can't have these sort of like plans that are just a piece of paper, do you know?
Europe is already sort of, as I say, promoting digital innovation, smart city. I mean, there's already 3D models being made of parts of Dublin. But where we saw the potential in terms of built heritage is that you would be able to demonstrate where significance still lay within a building and where there was opportunity for adaptation, intervention, whatever. But also the wider context of built heritage as part of urban regeneration and how it informs character.
Yeah, it's like a tool that we're not using at the minute, isn't it? You know, I mean, I'm really excited about this, actually, because to me, our towns will then come alive again and we'll rediscover, you know, backlands and what can be done with them, or infill, you know, as you said, to sort of make our towns more resilient. In terms of, you know, the 3D modelling, obviously, like, everybody can be involved with that, you know, different skills and different backgrounds. So, like, how do you feel about collaboration in the built environment, you know, town centres? I mean, our programme, obviously, that we're all working on is very much about collaboration and trying to break down those silos. You know, what do you think is needed to get the sectors more together?
I think there's a number of different levels that collaboration can and will need to take place. I think the setting up of the interdepartmental working group is a great step forward in terms of establishing the joined up thinking. But the Angel Street study also demonstrated the real benefit of collaboration within a local authority system, and the different aspects that need to be thought about. Towns need to have good mobility strategies, they need good public realm design, they need buildings to be repaired and maintained and brought back into life. These are all processes that need to have regard to each other. They don't work as just isolated, incremental. So I think what I've learned about conservation in the time that I've been active in it is that it is a long process. It needs resources, it needs supports. But it does, once it starts to gather momentum, deliver really positive results. And I just want to mention historic town funding programs that we support in the department, the HTI, the Historic Towns Initiative, and the Eye to All Town Network. They all produce really interesting projects at a smaller scale that perhaps just need to be scaled up and delivered in a more wide...
I think that's it, Nikki. We're getting started. You know, the wheel, to me, I feel that it's turning, but those building owners, like, we need to give them more support, but we also need to find out who they are and, you know, if the building is vacant, you know, what can we do to help you? And it is that collaboration, as you say. And, you know, in terms of like other member states, you know, EU member states, what are you sort of talking to them about? I know you're involved in you're a departmental rep on a EU committee. So, I mean, that's really exciting for you, isn't it, to hear what other countries are doing?
Really a fantastic opportunity to see. It's been a complete immersion in European practice and policy and seeing how innovative they are in terms of developing strategies for engaging and having communities participate. I mean, that was one of the things that really struck me about the Herb Act program, and it's continued from there. And we've been doing things like that ourselves. The Government Policy and Architecture has produced the ORI Town Toolkit, which is a great planning tool for getting community engagement.
Yeah, and that ORI Toolkit, that was supported by your department, wasn't it? Yeah.
Under the Government Policy and Architecture. Yeah. And then the work of the likes of the Irish Architectural Foundation and community projects that they have been delivering. I mean, KELS have really had extraordinary benefit from this sort of citizen participation that has been taking place in terms of putting together a visualization for the town.
Yeah, and I think that's the future really for our town centres, that kind of, you know, participative planning. And I know, you know, we're trying to practice that in the programme, and, you know, new towns that have come into the programme, such as Tipperary Town, you know, we're really trying to work with the civic leaders. It's the only way forward, because they, as you said about sort of sense of place, they are the ones that understand the value of their place better than any practitioner coming in. It's our job to facilitate, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and to listen well. Yeah. I think there's a lot of really positive stuff that we can build off. I think multidisciplinary teams within local authorities are essential. I really see in Europe that they have a lot of engagement tools and really work at that and really value that. There's been wonderful projects that I can refer to, like Urban Maestro, which is a research program that's just coming to completion now of all the policies in Europe that really have delivered high quality built environment for people.
That's really good. So it's like exemplars at a European level. That's fab. I mean, that's what we're looking for, really, isn't it? You know, like, so that we don't kill ourselves. It's already been a hard enough job getting to this place with the programme. So,
yeah.
I mean, that'd be really good for phase two. Nikki, maybe we could have another event, you know, in the new year to sort of like to fuel phase two of the programme, because we are going to start to look at town and building renewal plans.
Yeah, I think this task force will be able to look at these other examples and try and bed them in as practice for Ireland. I just want to mention another really engaging policy was the Danish architectural policy, putting people first, and how they have produced a guide for embedding the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And that really is underpinning our own Project Ireland, our town centre regeneration. And, you know, these are all projects that we can look to now in the future and gain great knowledge from.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a growing awareness in the European Commission as well about the importance of sort of towns, cities, you know, that we have to, you know, we have to re-engage and we have to reimagine, and we want to live in these places again. And housing is definitely in there, you know, housing provision, housing supply.
Oh, it's very much about not leaving no one behind.
Yeah. I mean, it's good for society if we do that. Okay. So in terms of the EU Green Deal, I mean, obviously, well, I mean, I'm sort of trying to play catch up and read up on this stuff. So maybe you could tell us, I mean, I have read about building passports, which I thought was really interesting. So what are your thoughts in terms of what you've read so far, or with your work with the European Commission committee?
Well, the European Commission, very fortunately, we met with DG Grow and we were able to affect the thinking and the drafting of their approach.
So that's Damir, who was a previous podcast speaker. Yeah, you've met with his department, right? Very good.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, the European Commission is really supportive of high quality architecture and built environment for everyone, and getting a high quality outcome from funding, you know, this renovation wave is really important. And I suppose if I was to sort of focus on an area that I think Ireland needs to come up to speed with really quickly, it is understanding our building stock and particularly our historic building stock and how it can be upgraded appropriately.
I'd agree with you entirely there, because actually the Heritage Council, one of the submissions we put into the National Planning Framework was to set up a building stock programme. Yeah. You know, the way the Dutch have it all sort of mapped and they know exactly what's going on with their building stock. So I couldn't agree more with you, Nick. It's so important. If you don't know what you've got, how are you meant to sort of do the cost benefits, how are you meant to do the social impact assessments, you know, which we need as well. It's not just a financial appraisal, it has to be more than that.
It's really important that we build confidence in our towns and that people see that they are sustainable places to live and high quality places to live. I mean, I'm very fortunate to live near Monkstown in Dunmurry, and really struck me during the COVID-19 lockdown, the quality of the place in terms of the facilities, the amenity, and really how a local authority, architect and engineer collaborating together had produced this extraordinary, you know, village centre for people to be able to meet and to, you know, socialise safely, to maintain their lives in some way. Really, really important. And I remember asking a colleague about how was it that this row of mews structures or coach houses, former coach houses that sat behind a sea-fronted terrace, had all become restaurants and shops. And it was a decision in a previous development plan to rezone them for commercial use and to build a village streetscape.
Yeah, to have a vision for that. Yeah, I mean, that's what placemaking's all about. You've got to have a vision and have the community involved.
It's one thing having the plan to lead it out, but it's also then the commitment to the plan to see it through. And that's the bit that I think we have to get better at, you know?
Yeah, and the placemaking.
And getting people's buy-in into that.
Yeah, the placemaking it's a community, it's a society, you know, societal thing. It's not just restricted to planning. And that's how I feel very strongly. And I'm a planner. You know, it has to be above planning. It's about how we live in our country post-pandemic, you know. Next year we need to sort of just, you know, hit the ground running, boots on the ground January, and see what we can do with this Town Centre First policy, what's coming through, and as you say, with your new policy, your unit's new policy on architecture. So thank you very much, Nikki. That has been absolutely fascinating. I really enjoyed talking to you. Your ideas are amazing, and the role that you have with Europe is obviously going to be so, like, you know, productive, isn't it?
Absolutely. And to be able to engage with other member states and see how they're going, you know, our problems aren't isolated, and I think what we can learn from our European partners is really invaluable.
And it just builds that collaboration, doesn't it? It just gets that whole sort of culture going. I mean, you know, it's great that we've got the European Commission. It's great that, particularly obviously with Brexit coming as well.
I'm co-chairing with some Dutch colleagues on the piece of work that we're doing. We're actually looking at case studies from member states of best practice. But their own case study that they put forward is about a panorama from the Netherlands. And goodness me, if there was a way of bringing a vision to a society, I think it's quite extraordinary, and it's worth looking at. I don't know if you've ever experienced being in the middle of a panorama picture. The idea is that you stand into the middle of the picture, and the picture is all around you. There's a fabulous one in Wroclaw where it's you're in the middle of a battle zone. So the Dutch have taken this idea, and they have actually developed a visual of what Dutch society is going to look like in 30, 40 years' time.
Wow.
And you can stand in the middle of this panorama and see what your country is going to look like, how you're going to deal with climate change, what kind of buildings you're going to build, what's your energy sources are going to be.
Okay, so we'll try and share that maybe if we can. Okay, so one last question. This is the question that I ask all the podcast speakers, right? If you could do one thing for Irish town centres, what would it be?
I thought about this long and hard. I'm going to draw on my experience of living, as I say, near a historic village and how it has organised itself. And I'm also going to draw the connection to a symposium the department held last year on early buildings and towns. And we were very fortunate to have a guest speaker from York Conservation Trust, Vanessa Butler. The work that she presented was based on repair and reuse of historic buildings, but also how to build within their building plot in a sympathetic way. So it wasn't just repairing the building as an incremental thing, but it was this evolution of original town building plots and, you know, the development of contemporary housing that supported the context of the historic buildings. For me, that's the big step that we have to really think about for towns, how we can offset new development with historic and support it and look at, you know, climate change measures, support the historic with, you know, renewable energies and that are housed in contemporary livings, that sort of thing. So we need to be working in a holistic way.
Yeah, that's so true. We need to be sort of sensitive to the old in order to do the new, really, don't we? And know about our town centres. And I mean, that's the beauty of the CTCHC programme, is we're trying to start to gather all that data. And then, as you say, you know, to sort of move into the next to drill down a bit now, we've looked at the town centres and now to look at the buildings and rediscover the buildings. And I think that everybody's really enthused about that, because when you're rediscovering something, you learn something, and everybody's on a learning journey here, really, aren't, you know, none of us claim to be experts. We're just passionate.
I say very much my journey has been enriched by the people who I've worked with along the way. So.
Yeah, it's good fun, and thank you for all your contribution to the CTCHC in 2020 and those workshops and stuff. So it was all really good, really enjoyable. Thank you very much, Nikki Matthews. Thanks again to Nikki Matthews for that fascinating overview of the potential for the reuse of traditional buildings in our historic town centres. Nikki highlights the importance of networking with other EU member states, and this will be particularly important in a new post-Brexit world. She also stresses the need for new methodologies that enable us to unlock the potential for building renewal in Ireland so that people can live in reimagined town centres in keeping with the EU Green Deal. This is so important. As other podcast speakers have said, the EU Green Deal, we have to tap into this. Thank you for listening, liking and sharing this podcast. We are loving all your feedback, and we're delighted to hear so many people are listening in. Feel free to get in touch, get involved in the conversation, or let us know what you're thinking by following the Heritage Council on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.